This is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. I'm Grace Cavalieri. With me is Mecca Verdell. We are on remote. We are not together physically, but I think our consciousness might overlap a bit. Mecca Verdell is going to say hello with an opening poem.
Yes, I am. Hello, Grace. I'm going to read now. This poem is called Distant Apologies. My father scans the grocery store, goes throughout the aisle. He tries to remember my favorite snacks, knowing even if he chooses the right one, it will be the wrong one. He's not here for snacks. He is looking for an apology. Nothing else can make us full. I'm too old for junk food, and he is too old to understand that this is how love begins to starve, how daughters embrace famine. Is it hard to say I'm sorry because you admit something? Surrender, sorrow, not remembering someone's favorite snacks, his fingers passes my phone number as he asks my mother for advice. I am home trying to understand how we apologize in this house, how we wait out hurt between dinners and hope if we give pain enough rides to the mall, the outing will be enough of an outlet to reset. I always remember the gifts and never the humility. Always feeling undeserving of this since he gave me half of my life, but has been chipping away at it with every conversation neglected, every announcement of, if you don't pay rent, then he don't pay attention to when I cry that he has exhausted my heartbeat. My father comes home, never saying hello, but throwing me my favorite snacks and I accept, since this is the only way we know how to forgive in our house. We give distant apologies we hope will add up to the real thing, since it be a technique that was never passed down. It be a redemption in practice, traffic on the way to Holy, and several trips to the grocery store.
The voice of Mecca Verdell. This is a young star on its rise.
Thank you.
I had read your book, which is forthcoming, and that is one of my favorite of all of the poems. Will you tell us, what is this book? It's a debut. It's forthcoming. What's the title and what is it about?
Hello, everyone. So my book is called Things to Unlearn. It's actually a book that I once just threw together, but it was one that I would just take to the open mics and be like, oh, please, I need, to sell things. But then I actually thought about it and started writing poems that actually were things that I did need to unlearn to be a better version of myself, a more healed version of myself. So these are all poems where I kind of look at where I was in most pain and I just examined it and didn't really look for the answers, but just looked for why I was hurting the way I was hurting and where it was coming from.
What a good lesson for people who want to write poetry. I think that is, poetry is the context for the wound, mm-hmm. in a way, and how you've discovered that at such a young age.
Thank you.
How did you manage to compete? How did you know about this contest? And what is the name of the contest and what is the competition you won?
Oh yeah, so the most recent of the competitions was for the Day 8 book competition where you win a book deal, and that's why I'm with you today. But before that, I did win a competition called the Individual World Poetry Slam where I became one of the top 5 poets in the world. So, So, I was able to train for that and, be prepared for that because I do something called slam poetry where it's like I go out and compete in different conventions and against different poets all over the country. And, I do very well. Like,
you how old you are, Mac?
I am 23 and I've been slamming and winning slams since I was 18.
Wow. Well, we are going to get to know you intimately because the poem is the mirror of the soul.
Yes.
So give us two together so we'll get a good sample of Mecca Verdell.
Okay, got you. This one's one of my favorites. My little sister is beautiful. She has our father's eyes, brown. Her mother's skin, light. Blinding. so blinding I can't even see her as my little sister, just competition. She looked like the women my dad left mom for. She looked like the girls all the world prefers. She looked like the revised version of me, and I look like a confused scribble, a black mass in comparison. But I protect her from myself. I keep the darkness at bay, even when it's in my eyes, my skin, my hair, when it's all around me and darkness is all around me and colorism is all around me. She don't even know what that is. But still, I protect her from myself. Even when her mom teach her to hate me and the world teach her to hate me, I love her with my eyes open, even when it hurts, even when she's so blinding and so beautiful. That's, yes, and that's that first piece. My next piece that I'm going to read for you is also pretty short. This piece is called Inches. Today, me and all the black girls used our spines as measuring stick, pulled our curls down our vertebrates, sizing each other up to see who had the longer hair, longing to use long and hair in the same sentence, stretching our hair thin, spreading ourselves thinner. When released, our curls quickly cringed from the lie, hovering inches from conventional beauty, so much space above our shoulders, yet such a weight there, not enough to hold down our hair.
You know, what I love so much about your work, not only the honesty and the bravery, but we all can relate to this. The way I had a sister too, and the way you write makes us know more about our own lives.
Yeah.
And that's what people are going to say about your book. So how did you know to be so fearless and to tell the truth?
So the first piece that I read you was one of the first pieces that I felt like this was me really looking at dark parts of myself that I was literally, I wasn't aware of until I learned more of, until I grew more of a vocabulary, because a lot of what I feel like a lot of black kids go through is that they don't know, they don't have access to talk about their feelings if they aren't granted the tools to talk about what is happening with them.
Wow.
And yeah, so when I learned what colorism is, I looked back at my life and I was like, oh, that was a very huge thing that was already affecting me and I didn't even know what it was. I remember the first time I read a poem to my dad about him, and it was like this slam, it was like a poem that I wrote for a competition, and I've always wanted to perform it for him in an audience setting, you know, to have that cushion, but it ended up happening while we were in the middle of an argument, and I was like, I have,
oh no,
yeah, so I read the poem to him, I was crying, and I was like, this is why I act the way I do and all this stuff. And it wasn't the poem that I read to you today, but it was like, it, even though we don't have the perfect or perfect relationship, it was the start to us communicating a lot differently and him seeing me a lot differently. So it's like, once I saw poetry as this tool for my life, you know, that's when I was realized, I was like, I have to write differently if I'm going to be able to grow differently.
Mecca, what a great line. I have to write differently if I want to grow differently. What a great line. I'm going to footnote you for that one.
Aww.
We want to hear more about, we are learning a little bit about the heart of Mecca Burdell, and now we want to hear the poem that talks of her heart.
Oh, wow.
So give us another.
I got you. Ooh, which one talks most about my heart?
Every one of them.
Yeah, honestly. All right, so this piece, I'll do this piece next. This piece is called Thrift Shop. Every black house runs a thrift shop. You can tell by the way we trade trauma like old clothing, and in my house, we are bursting at the seams because of the bags of clothes we carry. I still have the pajamas I was molested in. And no matter how many times they end up in the laundry, they will never be clean enough to give up like I did. I told him, I ain't want to go in no closet. Not only did I see his skeletons, I became one. Every caress on my breast felt like anger being pushed in my chest. I told my mom that this shirt was too big for me to handle, that these hand-me-downs got too much space for curious kissing cousins to hand you up bad memories, and all she can do was take my shirt to be washed, to be baptized, to be pressed and prayed, gave me another to cover up in, but though these clothes come in PTSD, one size fits all. See, my mom knows abuse like the back of her dress. I just wish she would have told me what it looked like before my cousins put the same one on me. We still know how to laugh. They make fun of my height, how I would never grow out of old clothes owned by my mother and her mother and her mother's mother. My father forgets every time I tell him, leaving me in a pile of healing that I have to make my own responsibility. But how do you fold a memory? And if every black house runs a thrift shop, why aren't we giving anything away to be burned like the plague? Let love and therapy be a flamethrower. I'ma watch these pajamas twist and curl over the embers like the sleepless nights I've had, because they will never find their way on my kid. I will never prepare them to be a sheep in my clothing. God, make me a Salvation Army the second hands lay on them, because they will never live in a thrift shop.
Mecca Verdell, you stun my soul.
Oh,
you
wow.
Stun my body. You absolutely
I don't think you understand
me.
How much of an honor it is to hear this from the Poet Laureate of Maryland, though. Like, I remember, I remember when I was like, oh my gosh, is there a competition? Is there a slam in order to be in this position? And, you know, it's of course it's much more formal than that. But I was just like,
well, let me tell everybody who you are,
yeah,
and what you've accomplished in your bright, beautiful life.
Thank you.
You have performed at Busboys and Poets, which is for the professionals, the Hippodrome, Kennedy Center, where you won Brave New Voices in 2016. Also, Southern Fried Regional Champion of 2017 and 18. 2017, former Youth Literary Ambassador of Baltimore. Top 10 for the annual Women of World Poetry Slam. Top 3 of Texas Grand Slam. One of the top 5 finalists of the Individual World Poetry Slam of 2019. Where are you going to go next?
I hope that I can actually be first in the Individual World Poetry Slam. I really want to be number one. Because there used to be a whole thing where if you won, you were the official the American representative for the world competition. Like
that's going to happen.
Yes,
it's got to happen.
I hope
because
so.
Because not only the work on the text, but the way you punch those words, the way you know how to get that vowel. The vowels are the queens of this, and you really know how to read.
Oh, thank
so
you.
So how do you differentiate slam from any other kind of poetry? I mean, what's the difference?
Well, it really isn't a difference. It's just the fact in performance. Because when you perform your poems, you have to do something differently where it becomes this complete showcase of, you know, how you perform a poem, how do you hit with your lines, how do you keep the audience intact. Like, when you read poetry, you don't have to hit. You know, it's a journey. It's more
right.
of a journey. With slam, it's more of a, how quickly can I tell you, how can I tell you this story and give you a full experience in 3 minutes?
Yeah,
so it's really just, you know, it can all transfer and come in between worlds when it's done in the right spaces. But that's the only difference, is like giving somebody this full on experience.
Oh, well, you've got it going on. So give us another poem, because we're getting to know you and to love you.
Oh, thank you. All right. So, I will do this poem. All right. This poem's called Weird Science. When grandma died, my uncle stopped smoking the grass she was now buried beneath and became a scientist. He studies rocks in broken neighborhoods, crumbles them up like second chances, found better use for razors than dissecting wrists. He is now a scientist. who gets a little closer to heaven with each expedition, scratches his observations on his arms, shoulders, neck. He couldn't stand to be without his notes. People sigh and tisk at his profession. He ain't care. Burning so much snow, you become winter inside. Cold, numb to his environment, nothing mattered as long as he could tell mama he was somebody, the new rock of his family, a scientist. He's so excited, shaking so hard he discovered how man could move mountains of depression with his homemade earthquakes, get high and spread with it. But it wasn't enough to separate the pain of losing someone. He had to get higher, but putting these minerals with medicinals didn't really bring him closer to a cure. It didn't really bring him closer to her. He just wanted to forget how much he failed himself, his mama, and every other job he tried. We all want that sometimes, to get back sometime. Pour its sands on your worst regrets and rewrite history on their shores. Well, we can't. Our mistakes either make us or break us down to the very grains of time we waste. With mine, I choose to create. I want to be architect, building poems out of stones I get from rock bottom. Maybe face my faults. Why don't judge my uncle? Because I have so many, and it's not his fault that I try to bare my soul. Why he tries to erase his? Because being in a drug fortress that forces you to choose between a rock and a heartache ain't always easy, especially when one dose can get rid of all the depression and one hit can knock out everything you hate about yourself, and just a little more dust can bring back lost angels. To apologize for not being there the first time, that's a mistake that we both share. And I ask my uncle, why don't you just write about it, man? I mean, it always helps me. And he laughs, cuz my uncle, he's not a writer, but he is a scientist, and proved that it is illogical to define loss. You can only feel it.
Mecca. We're talking to Mecca Verdell, who is a Baltimorean and whose future just is going to light up the whole world. Aww. That the way you read also, I notice how you accelerate, you build and build and build a momentum. You know when to slow down. You know when to heighten the tension. And then you always insert a little place in the poem where you turn a corner, like when you asked him if he could write a poem. Mm-hmm. And, you know, don't listen to anyone for the rest of your life. When they tell you what to do, don't listen to them. Just keep writing exactly what you're doing. You are chronicling your time in history, Mecca.
Wow.
You're telling people what they never knew before. Listen, I've been listening to poetry for 75 years, and you're telling me things I have never heard before.
Wow.
If that's not magic about poetry, then nothing is, really. What is a teaching artist, and what is Do More?
Oh, okay. So I am a teaching artist at Do More Baltimore. Do More Baltimore is a youth organization that is dedicated to putting poetry clubs in different Baltimore City public schools, jails, any hospitals, literally any institution within Baltimore that helps connect children to using poetry as a tool for healing and activism. So,
wow.
Yeah, I was in the club in 2015, my senior year of high school. And then shortly after, when I started slamming, I became a teacher at my old high school. So I go to my old high school. I teach our poetry classes once a week.
Huh.
And yeah, so that is what I do as a teaching artist. And I also get booked to go to different institutions and teach poetry as well as either just performing for them, like performing a tailored piece to their event, or a piece that I already have that they feel fits their event.
Right. This book is coming out, is the press called Day 8?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we need to praise them a bit, because it is your debut book, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so to premiere a book is really pretty special. And Robert Bettman, I think, has started this initiative for a few years and has given a lot of room to poets. Were you excited when you won?
I was very excited. I didn't know what to expect when I heard that it was like a slam and an open mic, right? Because I guess in a way, I just didn't know if my poetry was going to fit the mold of what people were looking for in books. And
Mecca, Mecca, you're making the mold.
I'm not,
just you make the mold. Let other people fit into you.
Yes,
please.
Yes. And you know, like, what, you know, I mean, that's the thing about me. I've always, even though I'm scared, I'll do it anyway. You know, so it's like, you know, I was scared, but I did it anyway. And I was really happy. Even when, like, when we found out there was an online vote, I was just like, everybody vote. I just, it was just a great experience. And I'm glad that I persevered and was able to do it.
Well, we're going to shout the name of this book.
Yes.
Say the title again. What is the title?
The title is called Things to Unlearn. And it has little short poems that have things and to learn in between my other poems. Things to Unlearn, and they're all numbered. And this is my favorite part of the
book.
Okay.
Well, we're right here for you, and we want to hear something, anything. We want to learn, Mecca. Read to us.
Okay, so I'm going to read you the most important poem in the book.
Whoa.
Yes, the most important one to me, at least.
Wow.
All right. To Aaron, I should have hugged you harder. I write poems differently now. My poems were written in holes, the in-between lines stretched open like a banshee screaming in hopes of breaking the half-empty glasses in me. Each word a kindling rock. Both the stepping stone and the flame burning a bridge to who I was, sometimes burning me in the process, but I still see her across the island. She sends me paper plane memories saying, forget me not or you will find your way here again. And I'm scared I'll get there, because these hands haven't finished a poem in some months now, and I've become a page half empty, an unfinished poem. Crumbled and tossed, scrapped for its good lines and gone, and it's been harder to stretch myself into something full, desirable, familiar, and entertaining, something I didn't write for just me. But I perform the hell out of it, though. My smile is bigger than spotlight, but when it goes out, it's dark out here, and everyone is gone except the front row of people who have always been there for me, even if I can't see them. In the distance, I hear scribbles like pen on paper because it's them on paper ready to write fight for me when I can't. And I forget because trust is a poem I've yet to memorize. And they've showed me in the heartbeat of their literature that a poem is never finished, it just simply stops moving. They know how to turn me into a paper boat, tell me I've cried too much and not to waste water, use all of this to get to this next island, so I write differently now. I write poems that look like them, and they look like a notebook full of the best unfinished poems. We all taking turns to put it all out on the line, protecting each other from those whose hands look like dirty erasers, look like they so used to crumbling a perfectly good poem, and that's exactly who we is. Bind it together. We, made of glittery black ink that looked like Odyssey, telling a story of what was and what could be. See, we love each other. And that's why it's so easy for us to keep loving other people, especially ourselves. Semicolons dancing on our milestones and not our tombstones. Not even God can end a poem on this day. And I tell them, we gonna write it all down until it's a run-on sentence far past a finishing line, until it transcends from haiku to sonnet to something epic, until it's just your palm print in words, until it sounds like a grandparent's story, like, and then, until we stop moving without our permission. But for now, please hold my hand. Tight enough that space and time can't get through, and let's write something different today. Something someone can hear but can't smudge. Something that feels like forever. Something that will be. That's my poem.
Mecca. Did you write that all at once?
Actually,
you gather images? Did you just do several drafts?
Well,
how did that come together?
This poem actually just came. This one was one of those poems that just came on its own and wrote itself, because it was one of the first times I experienced losing a very, very close friend. And a lot of the people that I am friends with, we're all black, we're all in our 20s, but a lot of us don't feel like we're gonna live past 25. So I kind of wrote this love letter to them. Not emotions. But yeah, I kind of wrote this love letter to them,
That's the poet's job, emotions.
Yeah. but yeah, it just reflects how I how much I want to hold on to them and how we're going to hold on to each other, you know, all that love stuff. But yeah,
your passion has found a home. It has found a home on the page. I can't think of a better place for it. Let's have another poem.
Ah, yes. So speaking of being emotional, this piece is called Things to Unlearn, number 404. A common critique I get, you cry if the wind blows. Of course, who else is going to remind me how to breathe and to move on? I cry for practice. It is the most important part of my day. I cry for breakfast. I cry for my mother. I have all the tears she had to hide from me. I cry, so I cannot hide from me. My God, as the wind blows, I will not hide. I will cry for me.
All the tears she had to hide. What a line. All the tears she had to hide. Wow, you're pretty observant.
Oh, thank you.
You notice, well, you have the poet is a noticer, right?
Mm-hmm.
You've been watching all the people in your lives and been secretly seeing things you didn't know you were even seeing, and they're coming out in the poem. That's the way I feel. What do you tell the students? I know you're getting people that may never have written before.
Mm.
What is the major thing you think you want them to know?
Every year I tell my students that poetry is just you trying to find a definition, your own definition of how you feel. We use poetry to make comparisons to things so that way we can better understand everything. If you feel like a butterfly, how do you find yourself in this butterfly? How do you find yourself in the world? It's just you trying to find mirrors in every single thing that you compare. And, you know, because that, going back to the whole learning what your broadening your vocab so that way you can better talk about your pain, poetry is broadening your view of how everything is connected and how you find yourself. Always, you're always finding yourself in whatever room that you're walking in, whatever space that you go to, whatever place, wherever, in the people that you meet, and the stuff just around your room. So it's, yeah, you're using poetry to literally view your story in a microscope.
Okay, give us a final poem.
A final poem. Wow, which one is the final poem?
Not the final one in your life.
Oh.
Just the one on the show.
Ah, that's funny. Okay. Also, just a quick shout out to my student. My student's actually a youth poet laureate of Baltimore, Grace. Her name is Destiny Butler.
Oh, yes. Oh, I'm glad to hear that. I hope she listens to the show.
I hope so, too. I'm going to definitely send y'all stuff y'all way. All right, but here's the last poem for the show. All right. Kikiing when we wasn't supposed to be. I asked my friend, oh my God, why can't you whisper? And her voice, as full as his hair, he'd tell me, girl, I'm Dominican. Whispering does not exist for us. My body vibrates in a silent laughter, the one that gets caught in your chest with no chances of escaping, and it makes me wonder why whispering is so easy for me, why making my voice small enough is my first thought. Everything about me is inappropriate while being appropriated. My mouth only know three tongues, English, whispering, and silence, all languages of the colonizer, and don't the devil speak in whispers, making every S stronger for the hissing, whispering not to alert the predators, so every day I hope Xavier's voice can be heard from his lips to God's ears. I hope it is a noise that never stops catching attention, pray he never get used to silence, or is silenced the way loud people like us usually are. I always show what my mouth can do because I'm a black girl and sometimes told I don't exist, that me nor our relationship resembles a damned whisper. It is our bright colors, loud, like two friends kikiing when they aren't supposed to be. We are living loud as hell while the world whispers we ain't supposed to be.
The voice of Mecca Verdell. And this is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. The series is produced by Forest Woods Media Productions. Post-production by Mike Turpin, MET Studios. We wish to thank the Library of Congress for making this program possible. Funding is provided by the Rivada Foundation of the Logan Family, the Sinipet Fund, Maryland Humanities, and the National Endowment for the Humanities. I'm Grace Cavalieri. Our engineer is Mike Turpin.